Hello, hello, hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
Number 72. We're so happy to have you with us. Welcome.
Welcome.
Hi, well, now it's your turn in the hot seat, Angie.
Well, first,
I know. I was thinking, should I even make an announcement at the beginning of the show, or should I turn it over to the kids?
Well,
let me welcome
Sally to our program, who has been kind enough to agree to swing in today and help me interview you, Angie, about your music.
Sally is from
the duo Dream Foundry, which consists of another member, Kevin Wallbank, in England, and Sally is in Norway. So this is delightful.
We figured you started this wonderful forum for your friends, for musicians to come on, discuss their work, and you and Rick are always such proactive promoters for them, and, you know, you really do a great lead-up. Now, it's your turn at bat, and we want to hear about your own career as a musician yourself, and, of course, you've got a new album coming out, Sterling Moon Lynx, and if we're lucky, we'll hear some selections from your previous album, Moon Goddess, and selections from the new one. Now, maybe you could start by saying, how did you get the album title?
Sterling Moon Lynx came directly from Rick and Carolyn Hunt. And maybe, I'm not sure from which of the two personalities. Rick, fill me in. Tell me how it all, because they just wrote to me, what Rick wrote and said, oh, this is your name, and I was so excited, and then I thought, what a great album title.
Well, being Native American and I was doing a ceremony on an island, and it was winter time, and we had trekked out to the island in the middle of this big pond, and did a ceremony on the island, and I was thinking about you, Angie, and wishing you the best of luck and love, and this just came to me. And I'm not trying to sound corny, but this is exactly what happened. And so I gave it to you.
Thank you.
What a gift. Well, it's just a perfect follow-up, too, for your first album was called Moon Goddess, and I've been, mm-hmm. Listening to this. And I'm hoping that you'll play some selections off that. I think we all have our favorites.
And what are your favorites?
My favorite one is Some of My Best Friends Are Strangers.
That's a great song. I like that song very much, too. Thank you. Yes, that is one of the first songs I wrote.
See, what impresses me about your first album is that it's all your own material. And then I always enjoy seeing how you describe these, because this was called punk burlesque. And that you might have just started a whole new genre, but the great thing is that these are all your own songs, and we're of course very interested in hearing.
There's two that aren't on Moonwalk.
Oh, okay.
One is the great Chico Rey, Crying in the Dark, and one is the fantastic Mona Lisa Ventress, Some Nights I Fake It. And
okay.
So I always just I have to, all the rest are mine, but those two. I recorded Crying in the Dark with Chico for Belafonte Records in Europe, and it was released as a single and did pretty well because, I mean, we toured Europe with it. And Some Nights I Fake It, Mona Lisa Ventress had a band called Il Culto out of Los Angeles, an Italian band, and they played in Italy and the States, and it's just a lovely song. So I just wanted to say there are two tracks that are covers of Chico and Mona Lisa's work.
Oh, okay. Well, you do work with Chico, and the collaboration is just fantastic, and so how did this come about? How did you meet? Because he's from Brazil, right? He's Brazilian.
He's actually that's a long story. Hopefully Chico will join us, and he can explain that. For a while, he thought he was Puerto Rican because that was what the Catholic Church in New York, who were the foundling home where he was placed with foster parents, where he came from. That's what they told him. But in recent times, with his medical history, they've now found he's actually probably from the Samoan Islands.
Hmm.
So it's very bizarre. Anyway, I met him in New York. I met him when he was a youngster. I think he said the first time we met, he was 14, and he came to see a show, and
wow.
He came and stood outside, and as I was coming out, I apparently stopped to talk to him, and he was just as handsome and cute as he could be, you know what I mean, just real pretty, a bunch of them, four or five friends, all probably played together in a band or something at high school, and they were just as cute as they could be. So I, chatted with them for a minute, and then I was in New York later, 7 or 8 years later, or maybe longer, and he was a friend of my boyfriend who was a drummer, and they were in a band together, and he said, "Oh, do you remember when we met?" And I said, "No, I don't. When was that?" And he told me the whole story, and I started to remember it. It was one of the first shows we did in New York, probably Carnegie Hall. And so that was how we got together. And I went to hear their band. And when I heard their band, I heard this song, Crying in the Dark. And I thought, ooh, I could sing that. I could do a great cover of that song. And so I talked to them. And before long, I had acquired Chico and Don Devereaux, who was my boyfriend, was playing drums. And we made in the other musicians, filled it out.
Wow.
Okay, well, that one, yeah, and then there's another one where you're working to, Romeo of Romance is a fantastic song, and so how was that one recorded?
Well, Romeo of Romance is, how it was recorded in several places, in Trident in London, and then finally mastered in Vienna at Astrophone Studios with Chico and I doing the production. And Chico, I used to really rile him. I would work his nerves, you know what I mean, because he played, with Carlos Santana. So at 17 years of age, he was touring with Carlos.
Hmm.
And so I would go, would you stop with all this rock and roll crap? I want to hear horns. I want to hear that big wall of sound from Latin America. And he would look at me and he'd just shake his head, you know. So I gave him a couple of songs. And I said, a couple of poems. And I said, look, I want to do these poems, but I want it huge, a wall of sound. Let's play it. Can we play it? Because my talking about it, it's so much easier.
Yes, we do. It's such a great song, and it is wall of sound. Just, woo, yeah.
I think Chico did a most brilliant job.
No, he did just a beautiful job.
Thank you.
there is kind of that, though. There's sort of a still spectral wall of sound feel to it.
Hi, everyone. I don't know why, but we seem to have had some issues with that.
Gremlins. Hello? Just blame it on gremlins. I always do.
I know. The gremlins. It started all over again.
It's such a great song. It needed to.
Well, that's right. Like I said, there is kind of that wall of sound. There's a bit of a sort of a modern Phil Spector kind of just washes over you. It's just fantastic. There is that wall of sound. I said it just sort of washes right over you. It's such a beautiful song. So you were
Thank
able
you.
To record this in several studios. How was it? Did you take hand in then the mixing, mastering, or did Chico do that? Or
no, we did it pretty much all together. The problem was is that the tapes were lost, and so we had to recover it all from a cassette. I took the cassette to my friend Larry Treadwell in Los Angeles, the great, he's a wonderful producer and great lead guitarist, plays Tom Dolby, and just a fabulous guy. And he was able to recover the tracks and play what needed to be played to fill it in. So the entire album was recovered.
Wow.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Which I find extraordinary.
And it sounds so good. Well, he must have worked some kind of magic, because when you take something and you're saying you had it on cassette, and it sounds so clear, it could have been recorded yesterday. So it's always good to know people who know what they're doing.
able to do work like that. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'm sure that it was a lot of fun for Chico. I know that he's known mostly as a bassist. He was working with Santana and Bette Midler and Anita Baker, and just probably be able to take a free rein a little bit too and do something a bit different. Now, Crying in the Dark, that's one you have to play, because that's the one that sort of kicked it off.
Well, yeah, and this is Chico's song, and this is a wonderful song. He's a marvelous songwriter. I was so thrilled. Here it is, by
All
Chico
right.
Ray, Crying in the Dark.
Bravo,
okay, so,
Chico.
Bravo.
Yeah. So, well, that it must have been fun for him to work on this with you. If he had done it himself and just see, you know, okay, let's see what your take on it, how it would be different. But I wanted to ask you something. When did you start as a musician yourself? Was this a gradual process? I mean, I can't say you weren't exactly on the periphery of music world because you were always very public. But as far as like singing, writing, performing, live recording, how did all that come about? You know, was it over the years
Funny,
just something?
And thank you for asking that question, Sally, because it's bizarre. I was thinking when I was listening to Crying in the Dark. The actual first musical event that I undertook was production. I produced backing tracks for my poetry. And I did that in 1975-76. And I wanted very sort of beatnik claps and beats and bells and all sorts of different sound effects as backing tracks with melodies on some of the specific tracks. And so I went into a place called Kitchen Sink Studios in Los Angeles. And I was working for Larry Flint's wife, Althea Flint, as a celebrity editor for a magazine called Fashion with a Vengeance, Rage was the name of the magazine. And they were paying me very well, and so I had money that I could spend to produce. And I went in there and I produced six tracks, and I set up my first poetry readings with these tracks. And they went very well, and I was booked to play in a lot of places. And then, of course, I started hearing melodies on top of the tracks when I was doing the poetry.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And all of a sudden, I realized there were lines that I could sing. They were just that they had a melody that was yelling at me. And so that kind of shocked me. And one of them, called Far From Me Tonight, the melody was so enormous and intense, I had to go back into the studio and record it with an actual chorus. And then I thought, oh, come on, you're a poet, for God's sake. Just write some songs. Stop running away from the issue. So that's how it started. And thank you for asking the question.
Yeah, running away from the issue, sure, because a lot of times I keep hearing, well, it's different, you know, writing poetry from writing lyrics. Not particularly. Sometimes if you start with lyrics and you just start writing, the song will come into your head. And, you know, or sometimes you just get the melody and it can be running through your head at any time. With me, it seems to be almost a grocery checkout line, yeah. And then these days you can just pull out your mobile and wherever you are, you know, hopefully in a safe place like the grocery checkout line, you just start singing into it. You can sing at it, and then you can save it. But I would back then in the 70s, you would have had to go to the studio and get this done. Now, when you had your when you had the backing band, like you were saying, you were having a beatnik backing band, probably something a little more contemporary than the usual original, say the bass and the bongos. Were they studio musicians or were they a band that you knew?
No, they were basically yes, they were all of the above. They were folks that I knew.
Okay.
They were studio musicians. In London, where I had taken the stuff from Kitchen Sink, and I got to London, and my friend Thunderclap Newman and Bob Flagg and this whole group, we decided we were going to do a show called Crisis Cabaret, because the Little Theatre at Upper St. Martin's Lane in London needed help to stay in business and to stay open. And it was a marvelous venue. It was right in the center of London. There was nothing about it. It wasn't fantastic. And so because I had these backing tracks and because a lot of people in the show were very, very talented and also had backing tracks, we decided to make it into a musical show. And it was absolutely wonderful. So it did very well. We were held over. We were supposed to play. We were supposed to do it for a week. They held us over for 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, they held us over for 6 weeks, which was not only flattering, but really fabulous for us, because by the time 6 weeks had gone by, we were all really good at it. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure. Well, maybe you ought to revive it. Maybe it's time to revive something like this.
We redid it in Los Angeles a couple of years later, and it was too wild for Los Angeles because there were four or five drag queens in it, and we rehearsed it for 6 weeks. It was the most fabulous show. Everyone in it was just incredible, including Harry Maslin's wife, Michelle Weiss Maslin. That's where I met Michelle Weiss, including Robert Musselman, the incredible singer, Sonny Adam and Chris Jennings. He goes by all those names. I mean, there were so many amazing people in it. And just on the day of the technical rehearsal, Seymour Morgenstern, who was the person who had given me the financial backing for the show, and a gentleman who did the casting for MASH, Christenfeld, I can't remember his first name, they came and they watched the technical rehearsal, and they said, this is, we can't possibly put this on. This is scandalous. This is undermining entire fabric of American culture. Forget about it. And we all just looked at each other, and we were like, fit to be tied. The show was brilliant. We knew it was funny. And, I mean, it was all singing, all dancing, 27 numbers. In exactly
don't you love how
you
can just get away with things in London that you can't get away with anywhere else in the world? And that's why I go often.
Yeah,
yes,
except sitting on lion statues.
Right.
They don't let you do it there.
Oh, well, they're more gentle about that than in many other places. So they just said, get down, you look too comfortable up there. But no, it's what the biggest shame is that you hear about these shows that you did, say, back in the 70s or until relatively recent, and there's no film of it, because back then there were no, you know, it wasn't so easy to film. You would have had to have, you know, say, professional cameraman or somebody with something very huge that they have on their shoulders.
And bad lighting. Yeah.
Oh, these days it's just so easy. But there are so many performances that, you know, I hear about, you know, from clients, whatever, and you're saying, oh, why was there not a film? And then you're having to remember that this was relatively recent. One thing, there's one tour that there are films from, this is great, you can find them on YouTube, is you were part of Adam Ant's Glitter Band, and you toured with him. And
it was one show.
Oh.
No, and it wasn't. The Glitter Band were all on their own. Adam Ant came
the
in
Glitter
as
Band
usual. I'm sorry.
Hmm?
I was supposed to do a show with the Glitter Band, and one of the things of the show was that I was going to do my own set before the Glitter Band came on, and I joined them.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So Adam Ant came in, usurped the entire time. So I wasn't able to do any of my songs. I ended up performing with him. But does that bother me or piss me off? Not at all. It's the joy of live performance, isn't it? You never know what you're going to get.
Oh, it's a bit like recording and techno glitches. There are so many variables involved in either, like I was saying, just a radio show or stage show, that there always has to be what I call the horseshoe nails. If you have remember the old poem about, for lack of a nail, the war was lost. And so if you don't have, so it's always good to have what I call the box full of horseshoe nails, so that if something goes wrong, you've got a plan B, sometimes you have to have a plan Z, depending on how many things can possibly go wrong.
Absolutely. Now, if you like, I'd be very happy. I do actually have a track on Moon Goddess from Crisis Cabaret, and that is one of your favorites, Some of My Best Friends Are Strangers. That was the opening of the show.
Okay.
Well, awesome.
That would be wonderful.
Let's go.
I was listening to that earlier, and I always did want to ask you and kept forgetting if you did any special cabaret shows, and now we know. But yes. that pre-war style, it really suits you. Would you think about doing something like this again?
Oh, yes. In fact, maybe I could talk you guys into listening to Johnny, because this is an amazing track. I mean, just in reference to what you're saying, Sally, it's so interesting you should say this. I lived in Silver Lake with my dear friend Steven Salberg. He had an apartment across the hall. And his boyfriend was this amazing designer called Orencio, the most remarkable. I used to do trunk shows for him. And, you know, wearing his clothes was just an absolute joy. So one morning, Orencio knocks on the door, and he said, I guess I was in the back or in the bedroom, didn't hear him. And when I walked into the living room, there was an album slid under the door and a note on it. And it said, you should cover this Marlena Dietrich song.
Marlena Dietrich.
And there was an arrow pointing to Johnny. And I thought, well, cool. Okay, what's this? So I played it, and it was wonderful, but it was in German, you know. And I thought, well, gosh, this would suit my contralto. Yes, I'd love to sing it. And I hummed along with it a few times. And suddenly I got the words. Suddenly. You know what? You know how that is, Sally. Like you,
yes.
With that, you suddenly know exactly what it is. And I just wrote the words all out. And then I thought, oh, I better go record this. And so that's what I did. And so it's not my song. They are my lyrics. I speak a little German, but not enough to translate it. But so this is my interpretation of the original song with words in English. That's the only way I can give credit to everyone. Does that sound like I've described it properly?
Yep, and I love this one.
So, absolutely. Yeah, well, let's hear it.
Thank you.
Yes. You know, I was thinking, you know, it's it seems like the whole that cabaret genre seems to be made for contraltos. And I have always wondered, you know, in cabaret there's always a camp element. And I'm wondering if you know, contraltos, who are never appreciated and always abused, get drawn to it. because of that, maybe there's always that kind of androgyny going on there.
Yes, I know what you mean. Yeah, that's very true.
You tend not to hear sopranos in cabaret.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah.
You know, well, not unless they're singing the soprano part in a Kurt Weill song. However, for the most part, when you think about this kind of, you know, this particular environment, you're always thinking of somebody singing about two octaves below what's considered normal.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful take, and you did a great job with the lyrics. Did you did you translate
them
and then just did you translate them and then just you know, with a poet?
No, I don't speak German.
Yeah.
No, I don't speak German.
Okay.
I just listened to it and I thought, I mean, I speak a lot of languages, but German is not one of them. And so I just thought of how it made me feel. It was easy to turn it into a love song in a German bar with an American Johnny.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, because I don't think I've ever heard the original, so I wouldn't know. I can read German. I can understand it if it's spoken. I just can't speak it myself. But now you're going to send me looking for the original, but that was just such a beautiful take on that. So we got past, let's say, 1976, you were doing this. We fast forward to 1996, and that was when you did a bit of collaboration with Jude Rollins. You did a cover of The Last Time.
Yeah, I did.
Mr. Rollins was, of course, with the Subterraneans.
Yeah, he is so great, and we had done a lot of sort of different things together, and I was very impressed with his literary achievements. He is a big aficionado of Blake and knows a lot about Sackville West and, you know, the writers' group in London in the 1890s and the 1920s and how they sort. He's just very, very well read, you know, and it was a pleasure to work with him. So one day he called me up and he said, I've just done It's the Last Time. We should do it as a duet, and I've got the backing track and yada, yada. And so we went ahead and did it. And even listening to it now, I must say, I enjoy it. It's a great Rolling Stones song, you know, but Jude did it. He's very good at minimalizing and then allowing something to be stark and good as opposed to full and good. You know what I mean? That sort of the difference in how we hear.
It does help to have a background where one's pretty well versed in history, because the great thing about writing songs or even covering a song is that you can always draw on, say, historical references, literary references. I think we do this all the time.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and then a few years later, this is when did work on Moon God start? That was released in, 2002?
Oh, sorry, love.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Moon
Goddess was like the collection of all of the songs. I went and took vocal lessons in 1974. And because I sang in a choir at school and everything, and did all that in history of music, theory of music, all that, played piano, yada, yada. But because I don't like keyboards, either for typing or for playing piano, I didn't stick to the piano. You know what I mean? So,
of course.
When I took these vocal lessons, I took them in New York with a marvelous gal, and in Los Angeles with another marvelous gal called Harriet Lee. And before I knew it, I was asked to do the Mike Douglas show. So, of course, you know, young and dumb and full of cum, I thought, oh, I better start. I'm not going to go on the Mike Douglas show and just sit there like a talking head. And so I went on the show, and I sang for the first time in my life in front of 14 million people on television. Yeah, I know. You know me. Let's not mess around. Let's go and, you know, just try to totally and utterly immerse oneself in madness. And I sang, I've Got a Crush on You. And it was a perfect song because Mike Douglas was very camp and a singer himself. And he immediately, the band was so good to me, so kind. They waited, they were fabulous, they put in little roles where they needed to be, and it all sounded just like it was, you know, rehearsed for hours. And it was a fluke, a total fluke. I couldn't believe I pulled it off. So that from
it
that
just sounds like a
on,
lucky accident, yeah.
Yes, it was, and I was fearless as a result. You know what I mean? I thought to myself, well, with enough rehearsal, I can do this sitting pretty, not a problem, you know what I mean. And so, as you were saying, what Moon Goddess was in the year 2000, when I went to see Larry Treadwell, for Johnny, I was in Los Angeles, and I went to see Larry Treadwell, and I said, Larry, I know you're a brilliant guitar player. Can you do flamenco? Can you, like, do plenty of that picky-ticky stuff? And he looked at me and said, absolutely. So all that great flamenco picking that's in Johnny was Larry Treadwell doing exactly what I had asked him to do, because I wanted it to be, you know, as you said, punk burlesque with a firecracker at the end. Well, you know what I mean. You said camp, you're absolutely right, because I like it to be in the style of, but then more. And so,
Sure. Well, yeah, there's camp that sort of makes fun of itself, but then there's camp which just does have an element of pathos, and that one does pull the tears out of you. You know, it's it was interesting to hear about Mike Douglas's band, because you could have gone on any show, and it wouldn't have been the right band. It just wouldn't have had the right flair. And it sounds like, you know, by some kind of kismet, you got on just the right show with just the right band. And that sort of, it almost like fate, sort of set you on your way. And so you were saying, okay, this is the sound I want, and this is what I want to recreate.
Yeah. It's a weird one, too, because when you were saying that about, you know, how did the album come about? It came about because all of that stuff in that year 2000, I thought, okay, how many hit songs do people have in their career? And I thought, if you have 7 or 8 that people remember, that's pretty good. And I've always been a little, you know, I don't need to find the words. I know you guys will fill it in. I just have a certain way of looking at things that is kind of like a shortcut. And I thought to myself, okay, let's put an album out with 11 or 12 songs on it, all of the best stuff that I've ever done since I started performing live. And who will care? It could just as well be the best of.
Mm-hmm.
Does it matter that I didn't put an album out every year? No. What matters was is that the songs that are on this album are interesting enough that they'll stand up, I thought.
Oh, and, absolutely. Sometimes people get so focused on trying to make an album that they hurry up and then they get a whole lot of filler instead of just waiting until they have enough of what's really quality. And then you can say, okay, now I've got enough and I can put it together something. Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And I mean, one of the songs that I always get such a kick out of is Turn My Heart Over Easy, because Turn My Heart Over Easy was my answer to punk rock.
Hmm.
You know, it's a punk song, but it's also a great song. It's just a song, and I always like to do that, to kind of dip my feet in the water and stir them around, you know, but be able to jump out real fast.
When I first got Moon Goddess, I remember listening to it over and over, and I found it really great to draw to.
Oh, great.
Yes.
I'm so glad.
Yeah, especially Fires. I love that song.
Together. Yeah. Well, okay, now you've got your new album coming out. When did that begin? After Moon Goddess was over, and you just, like you were saying, just would do a song and then, you know, just have it. And then until you had enough of a collection to put an album together, or was this in a relatively short time?
This was much shorter because I had stockpiled so much work. And putting together Fancy Footwork with Rick, that kind of made me much more aware of how much catalog I had.
Uh-huh.
And if you would like, I do have one song from Sterling Moonlinks that you said we should play, which is actually, you know, it's mastered. And he said, well, of all of them, he said, this is one is finished. If you would like to hear it, I would be happy to play.
Absolutely. Yes.
We're not going to let
okay,
go until you do.
What's it called?
Time.
Time.
Ticking.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, yesterday, a geographical location in time's abhorrent calendar, where there are no vacations. You may stop the video and so rewind, reel the tape back to the beginning. Time has no time for these mechanics. For youth is mirrored, senility caught. I wonder if it's possible to make old time a friend, thus acquiring the wisdom. Methodically, hours of our lives. Multiply the product of Earth men, and our energy survives. From the present, vengeful of each nation. Break us down as we seek to conquer. We become destiny, sad clown. And fate, yeah, fate is our memorial. And time again, we ignore the truth of nothing. Life's beginning. Thank you. There it is.
All right. Well, we can't wait to hear the whole one. That's a great teaser for the whole album.
Absolutely.
And,
I can't wait.
You know, when is it coming out, Ange?
I think it will be out. Just one second. I guess it's going to play it for us again.
Well,
that's enough now. Oh, no. Okay, there it is. I tell you, everything technical. When we had that thing earlier
like
in
wonky.
The show, I know, it's just like everything technical seems to have a mind of its own.
You don't know your own strength.
Well, maybe it's Mercury in retrograde. I always blame things on Mercury in retrograde, even if it's not, just so that I can't blame myself. You know, because a lot of
quite
the time,
right.
You know, I'll be like, I'll say, oh no, the vacuum cleaner doesn't work. It just doesn't work, and I'm getting all upset. My husband will say, try plugging it in, Sal. this happens more often than I care to admit. Okay, so it's coming out, let's see, what's the date again?
I think it will be out at the end of the year. I really do.
Uh-huh.
I can't imagine it coming out. I've got to do a show. I'm supposed to be doing a show in England in, I believe, it's the Rebellion Festival, which is at the beginning of August.
Yeah,
so I would love
right.
to have the album out by then. But I don't know if that's feasible. You know what I mean? Because I've got so many
sure,
things that I've been working
time.
On.
What
yeah.
kind of time do we have left here? I see 1 o'clock on my
we
clock
have none.
Here. Aha! Uh-huh.
We have none. We
well,
have
thank you, Sally, for being here. Thank you, Angie. Love
thank
you both.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Sally. Thank you, Rick, for talking to me about my music. I really enjoyed it.
No, so didn't I.
Great time. I think this is the best show it could have been.
Absolutely.
Oh, well, thank you, everybody. This has been so marvelous, and I really appreciate it. Thank you. It was. You're right, it was. It was interesting to be in the hot seat, to be the person,
well,
you know, talking about stuff. It's good. It gives one another view on it.
Well, it was interesting,
oh,
and it was refreshing to hear your music.
Absolutely.
Thank
do you think we can have a follow-up? When the album comes out, can we put you in the hot seat again?
Oh, I would love that. Thank you so much.
Oh,
I've enjoyed myself in this.
Yoo-hoo!
Okay, it's
and
a red
I can't wait,
day.
Sally, for you to come back on the show with Patty. You'll be back
in
2 weeks, won't you?
That's right. In 2 weeks, I'll be back on with Patty
Stratton.
Yeah,
very
so
talented.
This is exciting.
Yes, and like I was saying, we're all part of the same sort of Rutz Levelers village here, so it's going to be a lot of fun. But
yes.
When Sterling Moonlink comes out, like I was saying, you turn it bad again, and you'll be in the hot seat again.
Yeah, okay. And Rick, thank you so much.
Okay.
Sally,
oh, thank you so much.
So much.
Okay, you take care.
Everybody throw their sombreros in the air.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.